It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm Eros Debro, and this is the DFS game-by-game breakdown. Adam and I are going to roll through all of the early games, getting you ready to set your lineups for this Sunday. Adam, what's up, man? You ready to make some money?
Nobody likes us anymore, man. No guests this week. No friends. It's holiday season. People got stuff to do, and you know, it's going to be kind of a nice change of pace to have just me and you, like the old days. And by the old days, I mean like 12 weeks ago or something like that. But yeah, this is a pretty interesting slate. It's a little bit smaller, obviously, because we have the two Saturday games, which we did a separate podcast, which you can check out. We went about 25 minutes breaking down the two Saturday games. But yeah, this is an interesting slate. We talked about this like when the slate first dropped. Running back is pretty tough on this slate. That's kind of the headline for me on this Week 15 slate.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. It's definitely a position that we're going to talk about. I think there's some good plays. I'm really interested to see where roster percentage is going to come in this week. So if you're not checking that out on a weekly basis, you got to head over to FTN Daily, get signed up with the promo code FTC. You save 10% off of the rest of the season price. Get signed up. Check out Kyle Murray's fantastic roster percentage projections every single week. Dude is slaying it. And I think this slate is really, really awesome, man. I think there's really good games, some good totals here for us to attack. Like you're talking about, man, yeah, like it's holiday season, everybody's traveling and stuff, so let's rock this, dude, just old school style, just you and I breaking all these games down, man. Before we get rolling into these games, gotta mention here, support for Fade the Chalk is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your holiday jewels. The Manscaped engineering team has perfected the greatest trimmer, the Lawnmower 3.0. This thing goes for 90 minutes. You can use it in the shower. It is waterproof. So head over to manscaped.com. Use the promo code FTN at checkout. You're going to get 20% off and free shipping. The promo code FTN at manscaped.com. All right, Adam, let's get rolling here, dude. First game, Detroit is heading to Tennessee. The over-under is set at 51.5. Tennessee is favored by 11. A little surprise there. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, so once again, Detroit's offense really banged up. Kenny Galladay hasn't practiced in forever. He's not going to play. But Matthew Stafford with a rib injury didn't practice Thursday. Daryl Bevel said they're going to take it to the end of the week on a decision for him. Probably not going to play, so you're going to see Chase Daniel start at quarterback, and I mean, that's got to downgrade us with Marvin Jones and TJ Hockenson and DeAndre Swift. The matchup's good. I mean, Tennessee's dead last in pressure rated, or just over 16%. But like Marvin Jones is fairly priced at 5,700, getting a lot of end zone targets the last 5 or 6 weeks without Kenny Galladay. But like, do you really want to trust the quarterback play? And Hockenson's been so safe. I think Hockenson's still fine. Like, I still think he could be the guy that Daniel leads on. I mean, 7, 8, 9, 11 targets the last four games. He's had 50 yards or a touchdown in every game this season except for one. That was the Washington game. I think Hockenson's still the guy I would go to if I'm playing anybody from Detroit, especially because we know how bad tight end is. You have Kelce and Andrews in the slate, but you also don't have Darren Waller, who played on Thursday night. So yeah, it looks like we're going to have Chase Daniel at quarterback. And then the running backs, like DeAndre Swift, running back is bad. The matchup's fine. And with Daniel, maybe they're more conservative on offense and we get a lot more check down to DeAndre Swift. But what are his snaps going to look like? We don't know if he's going to be back to that 65% snap rate that he was before he had the concussion. So Detroit's pretty tough right now.
I actually really like DeAndre Swift in this spot. I know people could be a little bit surprised to hear that, but I think that people are not going to want to play DeAndre Swift tied to Chase Daniel. And look, there are two options. I actually think that hurts Marvin Jones out of anybody the most. Right. And I think people are going to want to not play DeAndre Swift in this spot because they're worried about, like, we have the health concerns. We have all these different things. But come on, man. He scored 15 points last week. He ran 22 routes versus AP ran 9 and Kerryon ran 9. And if you go back and you look at Chase Daniel, like since 2018, dude has had 133 pass attempts. He has targeted the running back position. And I understand that yes, some of this is different schemes, that some of this is the Bears, but some of this has also happened in a Lions uniform. He has targeted the running back position on 41% of his dropbacks, Adam. That is insane, dude.
That's, and if you look at the matchup, that's Alex Smithian.
It is. It is. And hey, we love JD McKissick. Why do you not want the better, way, way better version of him in DeAndre Swift, who is going to be matching up with a Tennessee defense that is 24th in DVOA versus the running back position? They have been beat. They're allowed the second most receiving touchdowns to running backs. I think that this is a good, sneaky good spot for DeAndre Swift. Like, if last week was, all right, let's get him involved. He's not going to be just the dude, but he's going to be involved, and he's going to be, like, pretty much, like, if not the guy, the 1B, like, nobody's going to want to play him on this slate. And if you look at him, he's priced around a lot of other running backs in the 6K range. At 6,400, I think that he could get overlooked, and I really like DeAndre Swift. I like TJ Hockenson as well. Really small sample size, 19 pass attempts total for Chase Daniels this season. Hawk is actually, he secured a touchdown with Daniels this season so far, 26% target share. You look at Tennessee, they are dead last, 32nd in DVOA versus the tight end position. So I love TJ Hockenson. I mean, dude, his red zone usage has been fantastic this season. 9th in red zone targets, 7th in targets inside the 10. And that's amongst everybody. Tight ends, running backs, wide receivers, everybody. So Hockenson's role is really being slept on. I don't think that Daniels is going to hurt him that much. He's going to be a safe, like, over the middle of the field check down option for him. So love Hockenson in this spot. Over to Tennessee, dude. I mean, look, it's all the same cast of characters.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
You got to like A.J. Brown. You got to like Corey Davis. They're basically what with, like, air yards, target share, all these different metrics. You're getting a massive, massive price decrease on Corey Davis. They don't want to price him up. We talked about other receivers this season that, like, DK just did not want to price Corey Davis up, or Brandon Cooks in previous weeks. Corey Davis is that dude, man. He's got fantastic ceiling. I don't know if he necessarily, like, to me with Corey Davis, it's going to depend on how popular he is. And if he's popular, then I'm more likely to kind of, like, move a little bit over to A.J. Brown. Not to say that I don't like Corey Davis, because I really freaking do. Because Detroit's running out they're running out of cornerbacks, man. Like, they're running out of healthy bodies to throw at these guys. Darrell Roberts has been dinged up, missing some practice. He's a guy to monitor walking into Sunday. I just don't think they have a cornerback that can stay with either one of these wide receivers. So they're both in play here. I'm probably not going to go the Jonnu Smith route. Like, Detroit's actually been decent versus tight ends, 12th in DVOA. I mean, come on. I know I buried the lead, like, incessantly here. But how much Derrick Henry is too much Derrick Henry? Like, are you willing to fade him this week? Because, I mean, dear God in heaven, especially on the running backs that we have on this slate, I don't know if I could do it, Adam.
If this is a different slate with running backs, maybe, because he's 9,500, but, like, I don't know how, like, I don't know how you can. It's a very risky proposition.
I don't know how you can either, especially because talking about the plays and all these other games and stuff like that, I mean, none of them are jumping out of you. You know what Henry is going to get the ball 20 to 25 times. Like, and 20 is being, I mean, I'm seriously undercutting it. You could say he's going to get the ball 25 times in this game. His floor is 20 points. His ceiling we've seen is 40. Like, he could break the slate. And I will not full fade him. I will have exposure to him. Now, how much is going to depend on what games that I stack. And, you know, I want to, if I'm running five teams, I want to try to get Derrick Henry, make it a point to try to get him on at least two of those teams. So then I'm at least matching, or I'm over the field on him slightly. Like, where do you think, Where do you think that Derrick Henry's roster percentage comes in at this week? Because I think it'll probably be, what, 35%? Maybe
I was
going
to say like 25 to 30%. So right around there, maybe a little higher.
Yeah, I don't disagree. So like I'm talking about, if I'm running five lineups, he's going to be on two of them. I'm going to make it a point to get him in there. Any other plays in this game?
I mean, yeah, if you want to get some leverage and play Tannehill with the receivers and not Derrick Henry, that's a way to go in tournaments, because we've seen Tannehill have efficient games with 27 to 30 pass attempts, and we know how bad this Lions defense is. So I wouldn't hate that. But yeah, I mean, Derrick Henry's clearly the guy in this game, and you know, maybe even just fully on the slate.
Yeah, I like Henry, man. I think it's difficult to even, you can't full fade him on this slate. I will not do it. All right, moving over to the next game. San Francisco is heading to Dallas. The over-under is set at 45. San Francisco is favored by 3. What do you like out of this game, Adam?
Yeah, we got to keep an eye on the San Francisco backfield. Raheem Mostert practiced in limited fashion on Thursday with the ankle. They sound pretty optimistic that he can play. And if he does, then this game becomes almost a wash for me. I mean, if we get Raheem Mostert out, Jeff Wilson becomes one of the best running back plays and one of the best value plays of the slate. He'll get 15 carries at least, all the goal line work against a bad Dallas run defense. And I guess they're also holding out hope that George Kittle could return. They designated him from injured reserve on Wednesday. It probably sounds more like he'll play next week if he plays at all. But yeah, like if we don't get Jeff Wilson at 5,100 against Dallas, who do you play from this game? Like, it's probably just Brandon Ayuk, who's 6,300. I think he'll be fairly popular, but for good reason. I mean, the guy's got a 30% target share over the last 4 weeks. He now is the clear 1A, or just one, with Deebo Samuel out with the hamstring injury. And it's Dallas. I mean, 6,300 for Brandon Ayuk, he's getting, you know, he had 16 targets last game. He's going to get, at worst, 8 targets. He's seen double-digit targets in 4 of his last 5, and the one game he didn't see that, or sorry, 3 of his last 4, and the one game he didn't see double-digit targets, he saw 9 targets against Buffalo. So it's really just Brandon Ayuk for me from this entire game if Jeff Wilson isn't the clear-cut lead starting running back.
God, I want to play Jeff Wilson in this game so bad. Like, I've heard all kinds of differing reports on Raheem Mostert. I know that they sound really positive. I'm taking that with a grain of salt walking into Sunday because it's Shanahan, man. Like, some coaches like to play with the media. We just don't know. I mean, like, they were talking about getting an MRI on him earlier in the week, and it all sounded like doom and gloom. I will not be surprised if Mostert's out. And if he's out, Jeff Wilson's going to be extremely popular, and for damn good reason. Like, Dallas is terrible on the ground. I mean, they have been horrible, horrible, horrible. I like the IU call. I think he is going to be insanely popular. And if you're looking at, like, a pivot or at least leverage out of this game, I think Kendrick Bourne is interesting. He's super freaking cheap. The Dallas Cowboys secondary is terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. He is going to be starting on the outside as the right wide receiver. He'll go into the slot on 3 wide receiver sets. So a lot of Rashard Robinson, who has been bad in very, very limited sample. 13 targets, 10 receptions, 134 passer rating allowed. I think he's in play. If you wanted to go with like a mini stack out like or a mini correlation in one of your other full game stacks, I like that a lot. Because on the Dallas side, we talked about Gallup last week. I know that CeeDee Lamb's routes got cut a little bit.
He disappears in the fourth quarter every week. You see Noah Brown and Cedric Wilson.
What the hell they're doing?
I remember the first time it happened, we were like, did CeeDee Lamb get hurt? And it just happens like almost every week where it's the fourth quarter and all of a sudden you see Noah Brown and Cedric Wilson and CeeDee Lamb's snaps aren't as high as they should be. It's weird. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I don't understand why they're doing it. I will say that if you're looking for value, man, he's got the talent. He's got the matchup. He's only 4,500 over on DK. He's either going to get Mosley if he returns or Deontay Johnson in the slot. Both of them have been bad. 101 or higher passer ratings for both of them. A combined 72 targets in their covers. They've allowed 5 receiving touchdowns. We've seen this team get beat by the slot. I mean, Cole Beasley just dog walked their secondary the entire freaking game. CeeDee Lamb could do that.
Yeah, so, the difference is Cole Beasley's playing with the MVP of the NFL. So, by the way, it was a joke. He's third. I get it. He's third.
Look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Red Rifle is great. Is he good enough to get the ball to CeeDee Lamb? Sure. Dude, I had like a small idea. And this is like as you're going through the slate. And I know as crazy as this sounds. I'm not going to probably do it. And this is only like on a millimaker team. If you were to go this route. But tell me this, Adam. For as much steam and as much love as people are going to give Brandon Ayuk this week. And we talk about how bad the Dallas pass defense is. Any thought at all? Because we've seen teams take down the Millie, like Mike Glennon, Jake Luton, like other like super stupidly cheap quarterbacks. The starter for the 49ers, like Nick Mullins. Like any thought about possibly rolling him out there and just rolling with super studs for the rest of your lineup? Like if we like Ayuk, and we know that the corners are so freaking bad. If Nick Mullins gives you 20, if he gives you 20 to 22 points, is that enough to even, like, insanely consider him on a millimaker squad?
I mean, if you just want to load up on Derrick Henry and Dalvin Cook, I guess you do that, right?
I mean, dude.
He wouldn't be the worst. Only... Like, I've played worse quarterbacks in worse spots at a cheap price tag than Nick Mullins against Dallas.
The only reason I'm saying, man, like, I know it's been blowouts, okay? But he scored 25 points in the total blowout versus Buffalo. He scored 20 points versus the Giants. Like, he's had other opportunities where he has scored 20 points or more. Like, I know it sounds crazy, and people are probably just like, oh, whatever, you're being too cute. And I understand the monster quarterbacks on this slate. I get it. I absolutely do. But we're talking about, like, he's freaking 5K. He's 5K. And he's tied to Brandon Ayuk, like, is going to be one of the most popular wide receivers for very good reason on this slate. If Ayuk goes for 110 and two scores, what are you talking about? Mullins has to get, like, I'm not talking about, like, does he get, like, 303, but, like, if he gets you 290 and three, like he gets one other touchdown out of somebody, because Dallas can't defend the tight end position. They're terrible. If Reed gets a touchdown, if Kendrick Bourne gets a touchdown, and he gets yardage regardless. Hell, if Dallas gets up in this game early and he has to throw. I know it sounds crazy, but I don't think it's that crazy of a proposition.
No. I'll probably have some exposure. Why not?
Okay.
especially if you, like, because I want to play Kelsey, and Kelsey ain't cheap. And Derrick Henry's obviously not cheap. So, like, if you want to just play the best players, not to mention the fact that there's some still higher-end receivers I like, then, yeah, Nick Mullins at 5,100. You could do worse.
Yep, I agree, man. All right, moving on. Chicago versus Minnesota. The over-under is set at 46. Minnesota is favored by 3. Dude, I know that people are going to want to go back to Trubisky on that one. I think it's a trap, to be honest. I'm really not on board with that. Like, I understand that Minnesota has been terrible. Tell me how I'm wrong. Like, are you interested in Trubisky and Allen Robinson in this game? And what are your thoughts, dude?
I'm interested in Allen Robinson because he is really good. Cameron Dantzler, the rookie corner from Minnesota, has been playing a lot better lately, but he still doesn't really have a chance against Allen Robinson. Robinson, third in the NFL in targets, eighth in target share, just under 26%. But I think the most intriguing part of this game is the tight ends, because this is where you can get some value, right? Kyle Rudolph has not practiced this week, didn't practice all of last week, putting him extremely questionable and probably more towards doubtful for this game. We saw that Irv Smith was splitting a lot of playing time with Tyler Conklin last week, but Conklin was run blocking more than Irv Smith, so that's still good. And Irv has been a good touchdown scorer in spot starts since he's entered the league. Chicago has been awful against tight ends. You look at this, they've allowed a touchdown to a tight end in 5 of their last 7, and it should be 6 of their last 7 because Jordan Akins let the ball hit him in the face last week.
Oh, God.
So they've been really bad against tight ends. Irv Smith, 3,600. And then you have Cole Kmet. Cole Kmet is 3K. We talked about him the last couple weeks on the waiver podcast and whatever. I'm going to play him. He's going to be one of my most popular tight ends on the slate. If I'm not playing Kelce or Andrews, I'm probably going to be playing a lot of Cole Kmet, and a lot of like my tight end exposure is going to come from this game. Cole Kmet, you know, 7 targets in each of the last 2 games. Jimmy Graham got the score last week, but Kmet should have had one as well. And you look since, I believe it's week 12. Yeah, Cole Kmet has run 77 pass routes, which is 17th in the NFL among tight ends. Jimmy Graham's run 48. So he's clearly been running as the starting tight end in this team. And Minnesota's not like an awful, they're a middle of the road matchup. But Eric Kendricks hasn't practiced this week. And he's been like he's PFF's like 6th graded linebacker. Really good in coverage. That could be really good for Cole Kmet.
I get the Kmet call, man. And I'm all in on Irv Smith. I love him this week. I know, strange things, huh? Weird for me to say that I love Irv Smith. Hashtag let Irv swerve. It needs to happen, man.
But here's the thing, though. I'm here for that. I wrote this up in my snaps and targets article. So Thielen and Jefferson were bad last week. That was literally all because of the pass rush by Tampa Bay. Kirk Cousins was under duress on like 48% of his dropbacks. And what happened? Conklin and Irv Smith combined for like 10 targets. CJ Ham had 3 targets. Dalvin had 4 targets. If Chicago's pass rush can get pressure, we could see a similar type of usage. And now, are Thielen and Jefferson going to be as bad as they were last week? Probably not. I'd be shocked. But if the pass rush gets there, Kirk Cousins is going to go to Irv Smith.
I mean, the difference is, though, Adam, like, Chicago can't pressure. They're tied for the 8th lowest pressure rate. Do you know the team they're tied for, Adam? They're tied with the New York Jets in pressure rate. I'm not worried about Chicago. And that was one of my concerns. Like, I'm building these stacks with Kirk Cousins last week, and I was like, man, I just got a bad feeling. If Tampa can get after him, I really don't think that Chicago can. I think that this is a good spot for Minnesota passing. Like I said, love Irv Smith in this spot now. Now, Conklin ran more routes than him last week. I think that's more of a function of Irv Smith trying to get back to full health. He's practicing. Doesn't sound like he's having issues this week. He was 4th in yards per route run against all tight ends last week. So I think it's a fantastic spot if Rudolph is out this week. He's still in play even if Rudolph does play, because we know that Rudolph is not going to be 100%. So I think it's a good spot, man. I think it's a good spot to go back to Minnesota in their passing. I mean, we saw Cousins. He threw for almost 300 the last time that they played this team. And we've talked about this before. We talked about this last week. The Chicago corners are frauds, man. Jalen Johnson, since week 6, 38 targets, 24 receptions, 4 touchdowns, and a 125 pass rating. If Buster Skrine is back this week, you can have at it in the slot. Jefferson and Thielen can feast in this game. They don't have a corner for Chicago. Kyle Fuller is playing exclusively one side of the field. So you're talking about Jefferson is going to run 74% of his routes away from Fuller. Thielen's going to run 53% of his routes, over 50% of his routes away from Fuller. So they're just going to sacrifice somebody on the other side, and they can eat versus these other two corners. So I like going back to Cousins in this spot. I'm probably not going to have a lot of interest in Dalvin. I think Chicago just makes it a point to try to shut him down. I get if people want to go there as a contrarian play. The
volume they did that in the first game, too. That Monday night game. Yep. They sold out to stop the run, and Dalvin was doing nothing until Keem Hicks left in the 4th quarter. Then he ripped off a couple of runs. Like that was clearly their
focal point. But he still didn't have a fantastic game either. No. And, I mean, I just... It's the same kind of narrative versus Tampa Bay. Like, people want to play him in bad spots and stuff like that. That's fine. I'm just not going to go there. I think there are some running backs in good game environments, and this is not one of them that I want to target. And I'm talking about, like, Trubisky and stuff. Allen Robinson, look, if you go back and you watch Dantzler, he has played really, really well the last few weeks. He stayed with Mike Evans all of last week. He was step for step with DJ Chark, who has more freaking speed and separation ability than even Allen Robinson, because Allen Robinson, his thing is contested catches, and that's what Dantzler does, man. He's a big body corner. He's not fast. He gets physical on you. Since week six, Cameron Dantzler, 36 targets, 19 receptions, 66 passer rating in his coverage. That's what I'm talking about, man. Like, I think it could be a trap spot. So I think people chasing Trubisky from last week, I don't really want it. I don't have any kind of interest in it, man. I'm not going to go that way. I like Minnesota passing in this game. I think Komet's an easy, super cheap run back option if you want to go that. Like, if you just wanted to go Cousins, Thielen, Jefferson, and running back, like, if you're not playing Irv and you wanted to run it back with Cole Komet, that's fine. I'm probably not going to go to David Montgomery. He's just not getting the volume, dude. Like, he tore up these last few weeks on the ground. And, like, even last week, if he doesn't rip off an 80-yard run, does he get there, Adam? Like, come on, man. Like, he got 11 freaking carries. Like, that's insane to me.
Yeah, and now he's in that 7. Oh, he's been kind of around that 7K range, but now he's at 7K. There's a certain running back who plays for the Los Angeles Rams that I'd rather play over him. My interest in this game, I still have interest in Robinson. Like, Dantzler's been better, but I still don't think he has a shot against A-Rob. And then, I don't know how I'm feeling on the Vikings receivers are almost like Seattle's, where it's like, I almost want, if I'm playing a lot of lineups, I kind of want some exposure to them every week, because Thielen can go for 2 touchdowns every week, and Jefferson can go for 100 touchdowns every week, because they've been so good. I just don't know if this is a game where Cousins throws the ball 35, 40 times. It might be slow, but they're priced fairly. Thielen still leads the NFL in end zone targets and end zone touchdowns, but they're not my favorite plays in the slate, but you know, they're fine. It's just, for me, the main interest in this game and the main takeaway is, if I'm not playing Travis Kelce or Mark Andrews, I'm probably playing a tight end from this game.
And so if you were going to stack up Cousins, so you're basically saying, would you more likely be going with one of Thielen or Jefferson and then pairing him with Irv?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm playing Cousins, I'm not playing without Thielen or Jefferson.
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm saying is, you're not going to go like 3 pass catchers with
Cousins. Oh, no.
Okay. No, totally got you. All right, moving on. Tampa Bay is heading to Atlanta. Tampa Bay is favored by 6 in this game. The over-under is set at 49.5. Let's get this out of the way right now, Adam. I will not play Captain Shitpants. I'm not playing Matt Ryan. I will not play him. Not going to do it. Uh-uh. So just that we've firmly established that. What is the rest of your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, so I really like Matt Ryan in this game. So the big thing from this game right now is Ronald Jones had the surgery on his, I think it was his pinky, and then he lands on the reserve COVID list, close contact. And I've seen like conflicting reports about him playing. He got placed on the reserve COVID list on Wednesday, and if he's a close contact, he has to go 5 days of negative tests. So that would put him out for Sunday. So if that's the case, you're gonna have to make a decision. Do you want to play any Leonard Fournette at 4,500? Matchup isn't great. Atlanta's run defense on a per-carry basis has been good, but Bruce Arians already said that Fournette will start if Ronald Jones can't play. Look, we might not get Jeff Wilson as the starter, so you might need some value at running back, and Fournette might offer that for you. Do you think Ronald Jones, like, if that's the case, then Ronald Jones can't play, right? Like, he literally can't play.
Yeah, I mean, if Ronald Jones, and we're going to treat this like, because here's the other thing. He had a procedure earlier in the week. Even if it's not the COVID thing, then it's his hand as well. So I'm just going to treat this like Ronald Jones is not going to play in this game.
Can you imagine him trying to catch with a surgically repaired broken finger after already not being able to catch? Yikes.
I was going to make a Chris Godwin reference, but I can't do that now. Dude, so tell me this. Make me the case for playing Leonard Fournette. Like, because I don't want to do that.
Running back's bad this week. He's 4,500 and he's getting 15 touchdowns. I'm not crazy about it either.
I don't know if that's a way. Like, I don't know if I can talk myself into that, Adam. Like, Atlanta is 6th in adjusted line yards allowed, 4th in open field yards allowed. Like, I can't. Like, I don't. I don't know if there's enough whiskey and bourbon in this world for me to drink enough to get blackout to make lineups to where I really want to play Fournette.
And maybe Tampa Bay just goes pass heavy in this game with Ronald Jones out. The question is, like, who the hell do you play from this passing game?
The
matchups are great, right? I mean, Mike Evans, great matchup. He's been a lot more consistent than we would have thought since Antonio Brown's been there and since Chris Godwin's been back. I mean, the Falcons allow the most fantasy points per game to opposing left wide receivers and the most yards per game at 75.2, and that's where Mike Evans lines up. They've been moving him around a lot more, but they're not great in the slot either. But Chris Godwin has been – he's been – I think I saw he's like the wide receiver 40 or something since – or in points per game or wide receiver 20 in points per game. Like, he's been almost non-existent. And then you have Gronk, who's in a great matchup. He might get four targets, but two of them might come in the end zone, and that could be enough. But, like, again, he's in that price range where I just don't play tight ends in that price range very often, that 4K range. I just don't know who to play from this passing game. I have no clue.
I'll be honest with you, man. This whole entire game, I really don't have a ton of love for, because here's the thing. Atlanta's actually been pressuring decent, okay? I know their corner play is not great, but Tom Brady under pressure is not – it's not an avenue or a road that anybody wants to walk down. It's terrible. And, I mean, where are the ceilings for these wide receivers? Like, Mike Evans has been making his bread off of
like
touchdowns.
Their ceilings are all, like, 6 for 70 and a score. Like,
that's the thing, dude. Like, you look at, like, this passing attack. Like, Mike Evans has not been hitting huge yardage ceilings. So you're really banking really off of two touchdowns. Chris Godwin hadn't been doing it either. Antonio Brown last week was losing routes and snaps to freaking Scotty Miller. Like, Antonio Brown ran 14 routes last week. Scotty Miller cut into his routes. You even look at Gronk. And I love the matchup for Gronk. Like, Atlanta has been terrible for tight ends. 10th most receiving yards, 3rd most receiving touchdowns allowed. But even Gronk, dude, his routes are being cut into by freaking Cameron Brate. Gronk only ran 14 routes versus Brate's 12 last week. And if you look at even over a longer sample size, so weeks 11 through 14, Gronk has run 72 routes versus Brate's 52. Like, you are literally hoping for ultimate efficiency out of an aging player and ceiling in this spot. And we're talking about Atlanta has been playing terribly on offense. Is that really an offense that you really want to bank and put American dollars behind to be able to push Tampa to throw the ball a ton and really air it out in this spot? Like, this entire game, Tampa can walk away from this game with a win, and this entire game can fail. That's where, like, I'm just like, look, like, I get the Calvin Ridley call. I get it if Julio's out again.
Yeah, he's the only player in this game that I actually have some interest in, because Julio hasn't practiced. I'd be shocked if he played. Carlton Davis has been, like, he was really good the first 5 weeks of the year, and since then he's been kind of getting lit up. So since week 10, Carlton Davis is allowing 412 yards in coverage, 3 touchdowns, and a 145 passer rating. And Ridley splits with that Julio this year, 11 targets per game, 105 yards, and nearly 23 DraftKings points per game. Like, we know these Tampa Bay corners are aggressive. Calvin Ridley's double move is absolutely elite. You just kind of have to hope that Matt Ryan can get the ball to him, but he's going to get 8 to 12 targets. He's the only one that I look at this game and say, okay, I kind of want to have some exposure. And of course, that's assuming Julio Jones is out. But, like, Hayden Hurst is not involved. You're not playing the running backs. Even if Ito Smith, Brian Hill, and Todd Gurley were all one running back, I still wouldn't play them.
I'm going to push back on you about Ridley, because here's my thing. He's not freaking cheap. He's $8,200.
That's why I like him in tournaments.
He's the third most, but that's what, like, here's my thing. Does he have the damn ceiling to pay off on that price?
I think he does. Like,
dude, I disagree with you. I really do, because here's the thing, dude. Tyreek Hill is at 88. DK is at 86. Calvin Ridley is at 8,200. And I get the target volume, but here's Calvin Ridley over the last few weeks, okay? 29 points last week. But then before that, 18, 17, 14, 7, 19, 18, 24, 19. You got to go all the way back to week two where he got to even close to 29 points that he hit last week, where he had 32 and 36 in weeks one and two. I don't think that he has it, man. Like, I don't really think that. Like, I think that it's really, really asking a whole hell of a lot out of Calvin Ridley with no Julio and a terrible Matt Ryan. And there is nothing else in this passing attack that, like, Tampa has to account for. Really, it's just, okay, we take Calvin Ridley away, fine. How in the absolute hell do you beat us? How do you beat us as an offense if we take Calvin Ridley away from you? We bracket him. What else does Atlanta have that they could possibly come at Tampa with? What, the ghost of Ty Gurley? What, Russell Gage? Come on, child, please. Hayden Hurst? He hasn't been doing anything all year. Now he's been such a yo-yo. Like, there's nothing else on this offense that Tampa really has to account for. It's really, okay, we take away Calvin Ridley, and what else you got, baby? Like, what you got? Come on! Like, that's my whole thing. Like, if Calvin Ridley was at 7K or somewhere in the mid-sevens, low-sevens, could I make you a better case for playing Calvin Ridley, especially if he's not popular? But at 82, like, that's a really tough pill to swallow, man. Like, tell me I'm wrong here, Adam.
No, you make very, very fair points. I just think that Calvin Ridley is really good, and I just don't see, like, they're not running the ball in this game at all.
Hell no.
They're not going to have any semblance of a running game. I just think Carlton Davis, like, he's good, but, like, I just think Ridley, and does he have the ceiling that Tyreek Hill has on a given week? Absolutely not. But in tournaments at that price range, I don't think people are going to go to him. I still think I wouldn't be shocked if Ridley went for 150 in a score. He'll get 12 targets. I play a lot of tournaments, so I just like him at that, in GPPs at that price.
No, I get that, man. Like, and I am one of the biggest Ridley stans ever. I love Calvin Ridley. It really just comes down to price for me. Like, if I'm paying up that much, I want a dude that can give me, has, like, upper echelon, like, 30-plus point, slate-breaker type of stuff in his range of outcomes. And I could say Tyreek has that. The game environment is there for him to... Dude, Tyreek Hill 3 weeks ago versus Tampa went for 60 freaking points. He broke every model known to man. Like, so, that's my whole thing. Like, I just don't know in this matchup with this offense, with Captain Shitpants throwing in the ball, that, like, Calvin Ridley could possibly capture that type of ceiling.
Fair enough. I do agree that this game could be kind of gross for fantasy, though.
It feels nasty overall, man. Like, I want to talk myself into it, but I think it's going to be a hard pass for me. Moving on to another game where I'm like, Houston is heading back to Indy. They're going to play. This game is going to be, the over-under is at 51. Indy is favored by 7. I don't really have a ton of love outside of, like, some pretty obvious options on the Indy side. Talk to me, Adam. I mean, are you willing to go back to Watson in this matchup? Like, and I get it. People are going to say, okay, but he went for 300. We were talking about all of this last week, and I understand the ceiling and floor for him. But tell me if you're going to go back to Watson in this spot. Give me a really good reason outside of, like, okay, well, we just saw this, and, I mean, 100 yards for multiple guys. Like, what's the reason you want to go back to Watson, or is it just simply that?
So, I don't know if you're reading my notes, but I absolutely do want to go back to Watson here. He's under 7K, 6,800. He's run really bad the last 2 weeks. So, yeah, like, the first Colts game, which was 2 weeks ago, he had 24 fantasy points, right? But that was, at the end of that game, it was a bad snap. He was going to score another touchdown, and it was a bad snap. He fumbled it. The game was over. Would have had 30 fantasy points. Then last week, the Jordan Akins drop, and I think it was on that same drive. It was the next play. I think the Akins play was on second down from, like, the five-yard line after the Akins drop. Third down comes up. Watson gets, like, hit low, gets hit in a region that men do not prefer to get hit, And he comes out. He has to come out for a play. Fourth down, they were going to go for it. McCarron comes in and takes a sack on fourth down. So Watson had another opportunity taken away for him to score a touchdown. At 6,800, he's still running. I mean, again, like I've talked about forever now, he's run for 25 yards or more in every game since week five except for one, and that game he had 24 yards. So the floor's there. Brandon Cooks is going to be back for this game. I just think the price and the floor and the ceiling combo, and nobody's going to want to play him. I really like Deshaun Watson here. He's just been a little bit unlucky. You're going to get 35 to 40 rushing yards most likely, and they're going to have to throw because I don't see David Johnson or Duke Johnson running effectively against this Colts front. So I like Watson a lot, and it's even easier to find out who to pair him with. Is the ceiling capped a little bit with Fuller not there? Sure, but he's still going to be a strong candidate to get you 25 fantasy points, and you can play him with Brandon Cooks. That's it from Houston, though. Like, you're not playing the running backs, and this you don't need to play the tight ends.
For no Kuti love? You're not going to go to Kiki?
He's just too expensive with Cooks back. He's 5,300. He's Chad Hansen, if Chad Hansen's going to be, I know they put him on the practice squad, but if he's back, like, he's been running a lot of routes. Like, Kiki Cutie's not even running that many routes. So.
And that's fair, man. I like your Cooks call a lot. Especially as we're talking about Brandon Ayuk is going to garner so much freaking ownership this week. I think Cooks is a really good pivot. Like, if we get word that he is going to be active, he is priced immediately in the middle of Brandon Ayuk is at 6,300. Hell, we're talking about Chris Godwin's at 6,200. Corey Davis and Marvin Jones are at 58 and 5,700. Cook is sandwiched in the middle of all those dudes, and I think that people are going to overlook. They're just going to keep on scrolling up or down and not want to play Cooks. And I'm with you on that. I like Cooks in this spot. I mean, we saw versus Indy, dude, he had 8 targets. He had 5 for 65. If he got into the end zone right there, I mean, come on, man. Like, you're talking about he has a good day. He's walking out of this. And Rockison is slow. He's a bigger corner. He's actually been beat, like, since week 7, 28 targets, 21 receptions, 105 pass rating. I love the Cooks call. Do you have a lot of interest in, I know we're going to talk about Jonathan Taylor in this game, but tell me, Colts pass catchers, any interest there?
There's going to be the T.Y. narrative of Houston, which
does
smash, but he's also just been more involved lately, which helps. Last 2 weeks, T.Y. Hilton, 13 catches, nearly 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. The matchup's really good. I mean, I'm fine with T.Y. Hilton. Part of me wants to take a shot on Michael Pittman if he's going to be against Hargraves. I just don't know if you have to on this slate. That's it, though. Like, I'm not playing the tight ends. You know, they're still using all 3 of them. Rivers is, like, fine in cash. Like, he's giving you, like, 2 touchdowns every week.
Mo'Ali Cox has missed practice this week so far.
It still wouldn't matter to me because I'm just going to play Cole Kmet, or I'll play one of the Dolphins tight ends.
It's fine. I just got to bring it up because Houston has been beat by the short passing. We've seen Trent Burton capture a ceiling, so I got to bring it up here.
That might be good for Pittman.
And I like that for Pittman, man. And I like Pittman a lot in this game. I don't think that Houston, dude, they're running out Vernon Hargraves and Creon Croson, and Philip Gaines is probably back in this game. Whoever's going to be lining up opposite of Vernon Hargraves, like, it's all bad. It's bad, Adam. Like, both of these corners are terrible, and this is one of the reasons why I loved Allen Robinson so much last week, is they don't have a guy that could stay with any of these receivers. That's why, like, I'm fine with, like, if you want to go and get different in your builds, I'm fine eating some T.Y. Hilton chalk. Like, you can't dispute, he's playing really well over the last 3 weeks, and whether we're talking about variance or better health, like, he's looking like the wide receiver that you and I were talking about that we wanted to play back when they play in Minnesota. Like, he's looking like that dude. And so I'm willing to go back to T.Y. Hilton. I like Pittman a ton in this spot because you look over the last few weeks, one, he's cheaper. Two, nobody's going to want to play him. Like, T.Y. Hilton's going to garner ownership. Pittman's at 4,800. And you look at the last few weeks, Adam, like weeks 12 through 14, Pittman actually has more red zone targets than T.Y. does, 4-3. So I think that it really comes down to, do you think that Pittman has a real ceiling that can be realized, or is he more of like, all right, like, I'm shooting for 16 to 19? Or Could you see a way where Pittman could get you 20, 25 in this spot?
I think his ceiling's probably like 90 and a touchdown.
Okay. But if he gets enough, I mean, if that's the case, then 90 touchdowns, 13. If he catches, what, six, seven balls, it, like, does that get you to 20?
Yeah, like, I wouldn't be sure. Like, he's going to see a lot of Hargraves in this game, and Hargraves has been terrible.
Yeah, Hargraves is hot trash. Like, he's horrible, man. That's kind of the whole point. Like, if Phillip Rivers, like, I would want to play Phillip Rivers in this spot because that is how freaking bad their corners are. But like,
he's a cash play. His ceiling's like 19. He's been getting like 17 to 19 every week.
Yep, I like that. I like that call a lot because Rivers is viable in cash. I think that that's fine. Like, I mean, literally, you look at the dude's game log. One, he's super cheap. He's at 5,900, and you look at his game log, like 17, 19, 18, 22, 19. Now, versus Baltimore, he scored 8 points. But past that, dude, like the other games before that, 22, 28. Like, he's going to get you in the neighborhood, if not 20 points in this spot. I mean, considering that, like, he's been hovering right around that 300 mark. Like, there are a bunch of game logs in here where I'm like, damn it. Like, I want to talk myself into it, but I can't. But, I mean, come on, man. Like, last time versus Houston, he went for 285, he got 19 points. If he'd have gotten to 300, which, I mean, it's 15 freaking yards, dude. You're talking about that he's got 24 points. Like, there's all these games just like that. 295 passing yards, 288. Like, where he's flirting with possibly a really damn good day, and you're like, geez. Like, it kind of tempts you, especially considering his price, but I don't know if I can go there. I doubt that I can. I think that I'll just target all the options that he's going to throw to in this game. We have not talked about, and no, I will not, I do not understand why in the absolute hell. Like, has Houston not proved to anybody enough times that, like, they can't run the ball this year? Their offensive line is terrible? Stop playing David Johnson! Stop playing Duke Johnson! Stop burning your damn money playing these running backs. Like, no! Just no! When you have this thought in your head, the next thing that needs to follow it is no! Like, I'm not doing that at all. But tell me, are you willing to go back to Jonathan Taylor here?
Yes. Last three games, because he missed the one game on the reserve COVID list, but last three games he's played 18.3 carries, over 110 rushing yards per game, and exactly one total touchdown per game. Houston, 37.4% of the yards allowed by the Texans this year have come via the run. It's the second highest rate in the NFL. Jordan Wilkins played, I think, six snaps last week, so he's not part of the picture anymore. Taylor got goal line work last week, which is important. I think he gets 18 to 20 carries in this game. He'll get you 3 to 4 catches. And at 7,200, the price is up, but the matchup and the involvement in the offense are also up. I'll be back on Jonathan Taylor, especially, like we said, this is not a great week for running backs.
So tell me this, and I'm going to read this off to you. I'm going to ask you right now, before I read all this off to you, any concern about Nyheim Hines?
Not really.
Okay. Last three games. Red zone usage. Taylor has 7 red zone rushes. Nyheim Hines has 8. Red zone targets. Taylor has 0. Nyheim Hines has 3. Targets. Nyheim Hines has 11. Taylor has 9. Now, obviously, Taylor beats him way up and down the field in the rushing attempts. That's obvious. But as far as, like, the money touches in close and the pass game usage. So I'll ask you again, Adam. Any concern about Nyheim Hines?
Nope, because the last three games, I think the Colts are seeing, okay, Jonathan Taylor's, the game's slowing down for him. He's finally the guy we draft him to be, and I think they're just going to realize that Nyheim Hines is a good player. He's going to be involved in their offense, but he's not going to be a guy that they should be giving short yardage touches to over Jonathan Taylor. So
okay, so I'll ask you this, because I like Taylor. I'm throwing this out there because here's my thing. I played Taylor last week. It worked out. He played fantastic. I think that I'll be back in him. The question for me comes into how much is enough versus too much, Jonathan Taylor. And if you're running five lineups, how many of them do you run Jonathan Taylor on?
Max two.
Okay, same.
I don't want to go crazy with him because there is still that risk, and yep. Like you don't predict fumbles, but you know certain players if they fumble more than others, they're done. And Jonathan Taylor, if he fumbles, he's probably done.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you there. Like I'm just trying to like just dip my toe into the water here because that's the whole thing. It's like. There's a lot of different outs for the Colts and their running backs and how their usage of all of the players in this offense. And, like, could Jonathan Taylor smash again? Yeah, he absolutely could. My whole thing is don't go overweight on Jonathan Taylor because the matchup is fantastic. There are some sneaky concerns under the surface. So I think that if you're running five lineups, Jonathan Taylor being involved in two of them, you're over the field on him, probably. We'll see where it comes in, like, as far as his roster percentage, but I think that you'll be over the field. And at that point, I'm fine. You're not buried if things go sideways, but you are overexposed. If he does smash again, you're in it to win it, man. So, moving on. Seattle is heading to Washington. The over-under set at 44.5. Seattle is favored by 6. Dude, this game is really easy for me. I mean, for me in this game, it's DK Metcalf as a one-off versus Kendall Fuller and the Washington defense, and I'm just probably moving on. Like, this game feels really, really gross. I don't have a lot of interest. Like, I'm sorry. Like, J.D. McKissick chalk last week.
You can't play J.D. McKissick at 57.
J.D. McKissick chalk last week was absolutely hysterically stupid. Like, I didn't understand it then. I won't do it now. It's ridiculous. Like, I was not going to play J.D. McKissick then. I'm not going to play him now. I'm only in on Metcalf because you and I have talked about this Washington secondary has been a fraud, man. Like, in the last few weeks, since week 7, Kendall Fuller, 44 targets, 29 receptions. He has allowed 5 receiving touchdowns and a 129 passer rating. So, DK Metcalf, I think, is a one-off that I love in this game. I don't really want to go to Russ because I don't believe that Washington can push them enough on the other side. I'm not going to play Logan Thomas. I think that that one game we saw versus Pittsburgh was an anomaly. I think that he's a trap. I'm not going to play him when Jamal Adams is probably going to be in coverage on him or other like options that I think that can cover him well. And I'm not going to go back to Terry McLaurin in this spot, man. Seattle's playing better as a defense.
I really want to play McLaurin so badly, but I just...
Tell me why. If you do, tell me why.
I'm struggling myself because we don't know if Haskins is going to start. It looks like he might. There's still a chance Alex Smith plays, but McLaurin hasn't been getting looks the last couple weeks. Seattle's defense has been playing better the last couple weeks, but they've also faced the Jets, and they faced Colt McCoy, and they faced the Eagles. So I'm not. They've been better, but they're still a team.
But how is Washington that much different than those other offenses currently constructed?
They're not much different, but the difference is like I'm only interested in one player from this team. It's not like I'm saying, okay, I think Washington can go off. But at the same time, like there's other receivers in that 6K price range that you like I'd rather play Brandon Ayuk. Yeah. Evans is close. I'm still kind of undecided on Terry McLaurin because he's like, we saw him. He was such a high floor guy at the beginning of the year. He's getting, like, 80 yards and or a touchdown every single week. And it just, the matchups the last 2 weeks have been great against, like, Pittsburgh's not an awful matchup, and San Francisco's not great.
Yeah, but Pittsburgh was running out backup corners, and Alex Smith was just like, nah, I'm good.
I almost prefer McLaurin if Haskins is starting, which is weird.
Which is DGAF mode. Like, he's just going to be like, forget it, man. Let's go.
But I do agree with you. I think the best play from this game, other than DK Metcalf, is pretty easily Washington's defense. They are grossly underpriced. Like they got this price.
It's crazy,
they got this price decrease because they're facing an elite quarterback and a really good offense. But at the same time, this is an elite defense with an elite defensive line. And Russell Wilson, we know he takes sacks. Like 2,600 for this team.
Well, the right tackle might be out too. Brandon Shell is not a definite to play. Yeah. So like, we could see that, like, just, like, picking on, sending, like,
I mean,
two
their defense
rushers
has had,
toward that side of the field.
Their
like,
defense has had four. The Washington defense has had four or more sacks in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of their last seven games. Like, they're not giving up. They haven't given up 20 points since week 10. Like, they're at home. They're just really, really mispriced.
Well, and look, even if Carson gets run in this game, I'm not going against Washington's run defense.
No,
like,
I think it's going to be a Metcalf game. I agree with you.
Yeah, like, I feel like if Seattle puts up points in this game, and here's the thing, dude. Fuller plays pretty much on one side of the field. I think that, like, if they want to, because Seattle's done that. They showed us that with Philly. They just picked on DK Metcalf versus Darius Slay the entire damn game. So if DK Metcalf is just punking Kendall Fuller the entire freaking game, you're telling me that Russell Wilson won't just be like, pew, pew, pew.
And that's why Lockett's been so underwhelming, because when they have an advantage with Metcalf, they just go to him. And that's why Lockett's been under 70 yards in each of his last seven games, I think. Like, he's just kind of been unplayable.
Yep, I don't disagree, man. I can't go to Lockett. Jimmy Moreland in the slot for Washington's actually been pretty good this year. So I think that's it for me. I'm moving on to the next game. Over to another game. New England is heading to Miami. Over under is set at 41.5. The Dolphins are favored by 1.5 in this game. This game is just a full bleh. Like, I can't, man. Like, look, Lynn Bowden is getting some steam. I know that you attack the Patriots in the slot, but if this offense is depleted, I mean, look, we're going to talk about, like, some of the other players in this pass catching core got in limited practices, so if they play, but I've heard Lynn Bowden's steam. I'm not, man. Like, I can't play a popular punt play wide receiver that, here's the thing. If this offense doesn't have, if they have healthy pass catchers, then Lynn Bowden's not going to really be a thing. If they don't have healthy pass catchers, are you telling me Coach Bill doesn't know that as well? And he's not just going to say, all right, well, there's your one dude. Stop me, Myth. Mac Hollins.
I mean, Belichick's been so good against rookie quarterbacks in general, and now Tua might not have Parker or Gesicki, and we already know Gaskin's going to be out. So that worries me for sure.
This game is a full just no. Like, outside of playing the Patriots defense at 3K, I don't want any part of this damn game because it's gross. The total is low. There is nothing out of this game that I'm just like, ooh.
You want to hear something that is gross? If Mike Gesicki's out, I don't hate punting Durham Smythe. Because,
oh, God, tell me why. Why?
Dude, all Tua does is throw to tight ends in the end zone. I think the Miami tight ends have 13 touchdowns this
What's
year.
What's his price?
He's 3K.
Okay, then why aren't you playing Cole Kmet?
I'm saying if I just sprinkle my exposure around.
Like, sprinkle something somewhere else. Don't
tight
do that to yourself, Adam.
So, Shaheen, Gesicki, and Smythe have combined to account for nearly 47% of Miami's end zone targets and nearly 35% of their red zone targets. I'm just saying. If Parker and Gesicki are out. But yes, this should be a slow game with a lot of rushing attempts. I don't think I'm playing anybody on the Patriots, like, ever again. Maybe until next year.
Yeah.
Like, you could have talked me into DeAndre Washington in a solid matchup, but, like, Savon Ahmed might play. If he doesn't play, like,
Breida's off the COVID list.
I don't think they don't want to give Breida more than, like, 6 touches. So, like, if it's just Breida.
No, it still cuts into it, dude. It's still, even if it's 5 carries, it's still 5 carries.
I'm not playing either quarterback. Yeah, I'm not playing either quarterback here. I think if Parker does play and Gesicki and Grant are out, you can play Bowden because people will be off him more with Parker active. Parker's still going to see Gilmore, which Gilmore hasn't been as good this year, but it's still not a great spot. And then Bowden would still be in his usual role in the slot and get less attention potentially. But yeah, I mean, should be a defensive game, not a lot of points. Belichick against a rookie quarterback with banged up receivers. It's just not an ideal spot for a lot of fantasy production.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just you play the defense. I mean, this game is just it's disgusting, dude. Like I can't, and I get what you're saying about the Titans for Miami. I'm poo pooing it a little bit.
One of them are scoring if Gesicki's out.
But the whole thing about it is, I'll either play commit or I will find unearth $600 to get up to Irv Smith. I will find it somehow, some way. That's where it comes down to me. I'm like, I will find the $600 to get up to a player in a better matchup that actually has legitimate talent over playing one of these dumpster fire, garbage-ass Miami tight ends.
Hey, man, when's the last time you played in the NFL? Durham Smyson, an NFL player. You watch it.
Hey, watch your mouth. My 40 might not be that much different than his, so, you know, just saying. I'm not saying, but I'm saying. All right, man, heading over to Jacksonville is going to Baltimore. Baltimore's favored by 13, over-under is set at 47.5. What are your thoughts, man? And tell me, how much does Lamar Jackson smash?
Yeah, I mean, he should be really good here. Hollywood Brown, I'm not even calling that anymore. Marquise Brown.
Yeah! hold on. Did you just strip that man of the Hollywood moniker? Like, so is he only Marquise Brown on this podcast from now on?
Dude, everybody on Twitter is not calling him Hollywood anymore. He's okay. That's not his name anymore. He has scored.
Sir Marquise Brown, are you going?
He has scored in three straight games, but he's now he's on the COVID list, close contact. They said that even if he doesn't, without practicing, he could still play. But you have to consider him questionable at best, which means we could see Willie Snead become, I don't even want to say the lead receiver, because he's been like the 1B for most of the year. But, I mean, Jacksonville has allowed a 100-yard receiver in 9 straight games. But that just might be 10 straight, and it might be Mark Andrews. Like, Mark Andrews could go for 100 in this game, especially if Brown is out. So I love stacking Lamar Jackson with Mark Andrews. This game, you know, they should be able to do whatever they want. The running backs, like, Dobbins can smash, but I don't know if he can play him at 5,900 if he's going to max out at 13, 14 carries. The good news is that Mark Ingram only played one offensive snap last week. The problem is Gus Edwards is still taking goal line work and getting 10 carries, and Lamar Jackson's still going to run 12 times. I don't know if I want to play him necessarily, but if I'm going to play a running back from this game, I'll take, you know, Gus Edwards at, you know, $1,500 savings and get this similar usage. And especially because when they've been well ahead in games late and running the clock down, Gus Edwards has been in the game. So it's really Lamar and Mark Andrews stacks. If you want to play Willie Snead, if Hollywood's out, I have no problem with it. Pretty simple, though. I mean, like, Lamar and Mark Andrews, I think Andrews goes for 100 in this game and continues the streak for Jacksonville. He's not a receiver, but he's a tight end who's essentially playing receiver.
I love the Gus Edwards call because that's actually the guy I was going to bring up here. I don't want to play J.K. Dobbins.
I was going to actually say I kind of want to play Edwards, but I thought you would laugh at me. So
hell no, man! Like I think he's the call. Like, and
how many carries do you think he gets? Especially if they win by 15, 16 points, he'll probably get like 15 carries.
12 to 15 in this spot. And I know people could say that's crazy considering the last few weeks he got 7, 7, 9, 3, 7, 11. You go all the way back to Pittsburgh, though. He got 16. The week before that, 14. I think that 12 to 15 game is not much different.
That Pittsburgh game, Mark Ingram was out. But if he's only playing, if his snaps are going down, he's not going to play any snaps, which still isn't a lock that's going to happen. But if he's not playing snaps, then it's really a two-man backfield again, like it was in that Pittsburgh game. So, like, this could be a game where Dobbins and Edwards both get 13, 14 carries. And against Jacksonville and this Baltimore offense, that's enough.
I like that. I really like the Gus Edwards call at 4,400. I really do. I'm on playing him over playing Dobbins because you're looking at similar volume. You don't worry about targets because Baltimore does not throw to their damn running backs at all. Like, basically, you look at these guys as similar plays to freaking Damian Harris. And that's what they are. Like, their upside is 15 to 20 carries, 100 yards, two scores. That is their upside ceiling in this matchup. And so it's like, are you going to play 5,900 for that? Or are you going to pay 4,400 for that? And for me, it's the 4,400. And we're looking for value on this slate. I don't think that it's insane to play Gus Edwards. I really, really don't. Considering that Jacksonville has been terrible. Like, they've been allowing tons of huge plays. Like, if you look at the last three games, they're 29th in yards per attempt, as well as 29th in yards per carry. And I think that Gus is in play. If you want to go to one of the receiving options, that's fine. I'm not chasing that. As far as Willie Snead and what have you, I love Mark Andrews in this spot because Jacksonville is 24th in DVOA against the tight end position. They have been allowing touchdowns at a really high rate, second most touchdowns to tight ends on the season. I think Andrews, I'm in a Lamar Jackson this week, man. I think that he could have just smash and grab here. I'm on Jackson and Andrews, and you don't have to bring it back. Like, I'm not going to play James Robinson at his role, at his cost. I can't do it, especially when you're talking about their left guard is out on COVID protocol. They just had their starting center, who is a top 4 to 5 run and pass blocking offensive lineman at his position at center. He's out now on the IR. So you're talking about an offensive line that's depleted by injuries, and now we want to play a more expensive James Robinson? I'm sorry, but hell no. I'm not doing that. I have burnt a ton of money on DJ Chark this year. Oh my God, I really have.
I'm not doing it.
I can't, dude. I mean, my whole thing is that, like, look, if you want to go to and look at the splits with Keelan Cole, with Gardner under center, they're juicy. They're great. But if he gets Marlon Humphrey in the freaking slot, then it ain't so great. And if Humphrey goes back and forth between the slot and right cornerback, he's going to see Chark, he's going to see Cole. They could pressure him well enough to, like, where Gardner just, like, falls apart in this matchup. Like, or if Gardner doesn't do good, we see Mike Glennon get more run in this game, and then just everybody's total dust. So I don't think that a run back is where you got to go in this game. Like, there are other cheap options. Like, if you wanted to even go, if you wanted to play, and I'm not really probably going to do this, but, like, if you wanted to play Lamar Jackson, Gus Edwards, and Mark Andrews, and you say, because Baltimore has one of the highest team in play totals on the freaking slate. Like, they're inside the top 5. If you want to say, okay, this is how they score all their touchdowns, and you want to try to grab up all the touchdowns and not run it back with anybody, then that's fine. I'm probably more likely to go Jackson and Andrews as a correlation or a mini stack, and skinny it up and not run it back, and play Gus Edwards and other lineups where I need the value, then play them all together. But I'm not against that either, man. But, I mean, your thoughts on that and any other spots in this game?
Yeah, Mark Andrews will be in a lot of my lineups. Jackson was allowed a touchdown to a tight end in 4 straight games. I mentioned how they've given up 100 yards to a pass catcher in 9 straight games. Again, they've all been receivers, but Mark Andrews is essentially a wide receiver in this offense, and his, you know, involvement will be even higher if Marquise Brown's out. So, yeah, I love that stack. I love James Robinson. Just, I don't want to go there here with this game environment. And yeah, I'm not playing anybody.
Why in the hell is Mark Andrews 2,500? Less than Travis Kelce? Like, what? Why?
I mean, with how good Kelsey's been, I don't think it's that absurd, but I do agree that Andrews should be a little bit more expensive in this spot.
Good God.
Yeah, I'll be playing him a lot.
I think it's crazy he is so much cheaper than Kelce, and people could say, like, yeah, but does he have the ceiling? Dude,
in this spot, he might.
He went for 96 yards and a touchdown. We talked and hammered on it.
You know what that's called for Travis Kelce? That's called a bad day for Travis Kelce at this point.
Hey, yeah, that's pretty fair, man.
Dude, he's about to set the record. He needs like 130 yards in that last 3 games to set the tight end yardage record. Like, he's probably going to do that in 1 game this week. Like, he's ridiculous.
We'll get to him. I'm not saying not to play Kelce. Yeah. What I'm saying here is if Kelce goes for 25, you could get the 25 for $2,500 less for Mark Andrews. And people say, whatever, Mark Andrews has not been that good. He went for 20 points versus Tennessee, and he had 96 yards. If you got over the 100, then you're staring at a 24 or 25-point day. He also went for 20 points versus Washington. He went for 22 points versus Cleveland. So if you don't think that Mark Andrews can get 20 to 25 points, then I don't know what the hell you're looking at, because we are on totally opposite pages. So I love Mark Andrews in this game.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, everyone. That is the early slate of games for the DFS breakdown. Adam is going to be back on Sunday to give you the game-by-game recap of the Week 15 action. Tune into that episode. It is always fantastic to get you ready for the week ahead. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at APPfeiffer24, and at ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.